Never the Way by Jonathan Bloom and Rupert Booth. Calico Knight Street was to be trusted, they said. Calico Knight Street wouldn't betray her to the authorities, would be there on time and wouldn't ask any questions about which gender she was. Calico Knight Street was in the process of standing Bernice Summerfield up. Bernice had selected the right hat for maximum shadiness, found the optimum part of the bar where the lighting was shadowy and the intense thick to hide as much of her intent, demeanour and, critically, face as possible, and had just got to the point where she had waited long enough to be sure that she wasn't in any imminent danger, but just too long enough to make her nervous about whether her contact was going to show up at all. This led to the usually paranoid but therefore safety-enhancing fantasies of double-crossing, reporting to the authorities, blah, blah, which had then led to the how-do-I-best-get-out-of-here-without-a-relative-dimensional-stabiliser train of thought, which had eventually been derailed by the third glass of cockle-warmer, a drink whose name promised more than it delivered, but which did at least have the right alcohol-to-not-alcohol ratio. She glanced across at Emmy, who was looking sullen, exactly as she expected an 11-year-old girl in a seedy, smoky bar to look. In fairness, she was an 11-year-old princess, so perhaps had less right to look sullen than most, but that wasn't stopping her. And the ornate green-purple-gold swirls of her makeup would immediately mark her out as royalty should anyone be looking. Bernice had tried to get her to wipe them off, but she really wasn't getting the whole fugitive thing yet. Emmy was hidden away in an alcove, within striking distance of Bernice, should the girl happen to come under attack. But this was one of the safer bars in the district, and while not exactly child-friendly, was at least child-safe, within reasonable parameters. With no sign of her contact, Bernice was already thinking up plans B through to Z. Her favourite was W, which involved flying elephants carrying war rockets from the planet Hyperion, and this seemed beyond her means at the moment, so she concentrated on the basics, which at the moment were getting her and Emmy out of there should the entire operation, she liked calling it that, go tits up.
Summerfield!
Ah! Managed Bernice. Sat opposite her was a walking spindle of a man, approximately 8 feet tall by the look of him, seated and with limbs that wouldn't intimidate a matchstick. His grotesquely long fingers fluttered in the air.
"Knight Street,"
he murmured, in a voice fluttering as much as his fingers.
"I have your papers."
The other hand displayed an envelope. "Mind if I check?" said Bernice, keeping her voice low and cool. Knight Street's brow furrowed.
"Trust Knight Street,"
he murmured, disconcertingly quietly. "I'll trust my eyes." Bernice replied, lying through her teeth, considering the amount of cockle-warmer swilling around in her bloodstream. Knight Street handed the envelope over without another word, and waited patiently while Bernice peered slightly myopically at the contents.
"I have a gun on you,"
whispered Knight Street.
"Eh? Under the table."
"Your hands are both on the table."
"Three hands."
Bernice smiled. "Oh, the possibilities. Documents are fine, thank you." Knight Street inclined his head.
"Leave good feedback," he said. "Now payment."
"You're not going to pay him," Emmy piped up, "from Mummy's account."
Bernice sighed through her teeth. "It's complicated."
"But we're not supposed to spend the Crown's money without checking with her,"
Emmy hurried up to the table, flaunting her royal face for all to see.
"I've got an idea. Why don't you just do it for us? It'd be fun."
She tried pointing him to them with eye contact and a peer pressure do it grin. Knight Street just blinked slowly at her. Bernice forced the urge to bury her face in her hands. She could feel the price tag ratcheting up with Emmy's every indiscreet word. "That's never the way it works," she told Emmy. Emmy shrugged, unrepentant.
"Mummy'd be mad if I didn't try."
Bernice took out a small jewelled purse and tossed it across the table to Knight Street, who picked it up and sniffed it. A broad smile gashed his face. Whatever was inside clearly pleased him. "I think that concludes our business," said Bernice, glancing across at Emmy with what she hoped was a time-to-go expression.
No,
said Knight Street, the smile widening.
I can make more today.
A fourth hand emerged from under the table, this one holding an active communicator.
Come and get her.
Oh, man, shouted Bernice, erupting from her seat, all attempts at subterfuge now being thrown out of the window. Come on, she shouted to Emmy, who reacted surprisingly positively to this exhortation, and made a dash for the door with her current mother substitute, just as an armoured figure rose out of the shadows in the back corner. Its whole form was covered in tiny chitinous scales. Even its face. No, wait, that wasn't a face. But it was rearranging itself into one. Hundreds of tiny squiggling things scurrying into place. Just like its arm, rearranging its bits into a jagged-edged weapon, ready to cleave down onto them.
Pede!
Cried Emmy, and ran. Emmy reached the door first and burst out of the bar into blistering sunshine, Bernice close after her. She turned briefly and overturned a table in front of the door, startling the queasy drinkers who were sitting at it. Sorry, she mouthed, and ran off as the cloaked assassin struggled and flowed over the table, buying them precious seconds.
What did you say that thing was?
Bernice gasped as they ran.
A peed!
Look, pretend I'm from another universe and don't know.
You know what a millipede is, right?
Well, yes.
So, put 1,000 of them together and you get a peed.
Could have been worse.
Which it promptly became, as another peed reared around the approaching corner, forcing them to career to the right and pelt down extremely nasty alley.
Gestalt? Didn't sneeze.
I mean, they're modular life forms.
Emmy nodded.
They snap together and their brains link up.
In any form they need.
Emmy nodded. So, linked abilities and intelligence, great for sending off individual pieces of yourself for reconnaissance and then bringing in the main force. Seriously, it's like they're the first species that's actually trying to evolve its way into a licensing deal.
The assassins use them because they grow fast and bite a lot, added Emmy.
Are they poisonous?
Not usually. They just keep biting.
Bernice scowled and dragged Emmy out of the way of another alarmingly weaving peed, whose mouthparts snick-snicked at the air where she had just been.
Oh, I wish your legs were longer.
They will be eventually, if you get us out of this,
replied Emmy reasonably. However, that seemed increasingly unlikely as they dived down another alleyway and ran straight into a wall.
Back!
Screamed Bernice, but, as Emmy would have pointed out if her voice was working properly, back was suddenly not an option. As the three peed pursuers linked themselves into one massive wall of assassin that coiled itself into the alley's entrance and sat there, hissing and steaming very slightly at them. All in all, the effect was not reassuring.
Back off, snarled Bernice. I've got a fragmatizer.
Emmy looked at her sideways.
A fragmatizer?
Shh!
To Emmy, and indeed Bernice's surprise, this threat seemed to have an effect on the peed.
Where is it?
The multi-creature hissed, drawing back slightly. Aha! Crowed Bernice, with as much front as she could muster.
Hidden on my person. Now let us go, or be fragmatized along with half this alleyway.
The peed gurgled. Was that laughter or indigestion?
A fragmatizer would be obvious on your person, slight humanoid,
it said. Bernice did a little mock curtsy. Oh, thank you for the slight bit, she answered, before pulling out a blaster and aiming it directly between the peed's compound eyes.
Okay, so lying didn't work. We'll try a bit of truth. Back off or I'll...
No,
said the peed calmly.
That's an Omnidrop 490. Bad design flaw is that the power meter is just above the barrel, and it's empty.
Right,
said Bernice, cursing. She showily cast the blaster aside and adopted a pugilistic stance. The peed put its hideous collected head slightly on one side in a curious humanoid gesture.
Your fists,
it observed,
are soft and delicate. You are an archaeologist, not a fighter.
Stop with the facts,
shouted Bernice in mounting irritation, quite aware that Emmy had been watching this pantomime with slight amusement creeping through her fear.
"What do you want?"
Emmy suddenly blurted, surprising Bernice, who was trying to stay on top of the situation, or at least giving the impression that was what she was doing. The peed actually sighed.
"We are an assassin," it said. "So we want the money that comes to us from your deaths."
"Well, if that's all," beamed Bernice, "we'll just get Mumsy to make you a better offer," Bernice said brightly. "Or she can have her men fire when ready." The wall of peed rippled as unaccountable tiny bugs swung around, eyes scanning for hidden troops, which gave Bernice enough time to stop thinking and shoulder charge it. Neither she nor Emmy were prepared for the consequences of this. Caught in mid-arrange, the peed burst asunder, splitting into its component creatures, which scurried in every direction, suddenly tiny and disempowered. The until now relatively laid-back denizens of the alley leapt to their feet, dancing about trying to evade the disassociated mini-peeds, which of course gave Bernice and Emmy exactly the kind of chaos that was very good for losing themselves in, which they immediately did. They had solved the immediate quandary, but made getting to the spaceport more difficult. Safer but more difficult seemed to be the story of Bernice's life right now. It seemed to go hand in hand with looking after a child, which brought back way too many memories for her. Keeping their heads down, Bernice and Emmy weaved through the crowds, occasionally catching a glimpse of one of the peds, now formed back into their original threesome. Time was against them, but to break cover and make a run for the spaceport would be suicidal. So it was a shame that Emmy had decided to do it with a childish holler of, "Come on!" Her legs sighing, Bernice broke cover and sprinted, catching up with Emmy in a few strides and overtaking the girl, whose bravado changed from "come on" to "wait for me," which Bernice found oddly satisfying. The peds noticed them immediately, but the crowd was as much of an impediment for them as it was for Bernice and Emmy, so the fugitives were able to maintain their lead as they crashed through the throng. In the distance, Bernice could see their way out of here. The spaceliner Wisso powering up, signs over the embarkation portal turning from green to red as the gates started to swing closed. "Move!" she hollered at Emmy, which was dramatic but unfair, as Emmy was already herring towards the gates, shouting for the port officer to wait, which, in contravention of the rules of all men in boxes at gates everywhere, he did, reversing the closing gates. This, reflected Bernice, is the power of the child.
"Good morning. Could I have your boarding papers and decon tags?"
Boarding papers they had, thanks to Night Street, and these were thrust into the official's face. He took his time scrutinising them, whilst in the background Bernice heard the distinctive drawn-out twang of a weft drive coming online. Weft drive wasn't the quickest method of transport, as its propulsion method was to weave between the lingering warp slipstreams of other more expensive ships and be dragged along in their wake. But it was cheap. And cheap was what really counted right now. Cheap and off this planet. She'd come back for her own ship later. It was too recognisable to be of use right now. She glanced behind her and saw, at a distance and impeded by crowds, the three peed assassins moving towards them. Desperately, she turned back to the official who was holding his hand out and moving his mouth.
Decon tags?
Bernice decided that truth was the best option at this point. The day was convoluted enough already.
We don't have decon tags, she sighed,
her eyes as wide and innocent as she could make them without looking like she had a thyroid problem. The man clicked his tongue a bit.
Space nicks, he chuckled.
Tell you what, I'll get a decon team to come down and give you the once-over, then you can board.
But the ship's about to leave, blurted Emmy.
The port officer looked at her not unkindly and raised a quizzical eyebrow.
Yes, but we do have to observe procedure. If I let you on board without a clear decon, you might end up wiping out the crew. Then where would you be?
Emmy opened her mouth to argue, but the guard held up a stern finger, hopefully one of his own.
And then there's the chorus system. Suppose you're carrying Flarthagon fever. 2 weeks and everyone in the system comes out in pus balls.
Bernice risked a look back to see the three peds converging on them, now simply thrusting people out of the way, scenting the end of the chase. Anne decided that potential pusballs were the least of their problems. "Okay," she said, levelling her pistol at the port officer's face, "let us through or lose your capacity to raise an eyebrow quizzically." The port officer's forehead creased slightly.
I think your gun is empty."
"I am so getting another pistol." She reversed the sidearm and smacked the port officer on the cranium with it, twice to make sure. "Sorry," she said, and meant it, as he collapsed, yowling and holding his head, while Bernice and Emmy hopped over him and tore for the ship, Bernice remembering to hit the control to close the gates as they went. Two of the peds made it in time to slip through, however, and, finally free of the crowds, opened fire, hurling little balls of their own micropeds at them, shattering into bitey bug fragments wherever they hit. Bernice and Emmy zigzagged crazily towards the ship. 20 meters, 10, 5, and they were grasping at the bottom of the slowly elevating entrance ramp, scrabbling to keep hold, Bernice's more experienced muscles straining as she heaved herself onto the platform, dragging Emmy after her. She gave the approaching peds a triumphant grin as the ramp slammed shut and the entire ship started to shudder with the energy of takeoff. "We did it!" gasped Bernice as they lurched out of the airlock, leaning heavily on a small black table beside the door. "Oh, as soon as we clear atmosphere, the ship will make the first weft jump, and we're safe."
"Okay," replied Emmy in a voice that wasn't quite sure of the next bit. "I still trust you. Just..."
As they stumbled off in search of a cabin, neither one saw the table disintegrate into its thousand component insects and skitter away into the shadows, which was probably good, as it would have seriously ruined their day if they had.
"How did we end up here?"
Emmy said dazedly. Bernice leaned wearily against their cabin door. "That, kid, is the question of the past, 25 years of my life." Here was the first interstellar banana boat to the Chorus system she'd been able to find. Mostly cargo, but with a couple of glorified cupboards for passengers and crew. She and Princess Emmy Lee Laurie Narkia, one of the daughters of the Dynarchy, ninth in line to the Red Throne, had 3 metres by 3 metres between them for the next 2 weeks, with two bunks and a shower cube and a pervasive smell of oil. Emmy was hugging her knees.
"I had things to do. This morning when I woke up, I wanted to make up with my half-sister, Charlie, because we had a fight. And Haley and Kirili and I were going to explore the far courtyard. I had lessons to get to and a hospital to open with Mum, and now I'm in space."
"Well, if your day made sense, it would hardly be an adventure, would it?" Bernie said as brightly as she could manage. Truth be told, Emmy had pretty much described her day as well.
I wasn't ready,"
she sniffled. "You and me both, kid."
"You keep calling me kid."
"Your sister said I could, kid." That got a bit of a smile, at least. Emmy was the sort of girl who didn't want to cry in case it smudged her makeup. She was also the sort of girl who would excitedly dash about the place, heedless of her tangle of robes and ornaments. In the weeks Bernice had known her, this was the stillest she'd ever been. "That's the thing about adventures," Bernice went on, trying to keep it light. "They don't have neat little stops and starts. They don't come at you one at a time. It all overlaps. The best you can hope for is to be light enough on your feet to keep up with it."
"Keep moving?"
"Yeah."
"Well, how do we keep moving here?"
Emmy's mum, the Red Queen, had allies in the Chorus system. It was far enough away from whatever family stoosh was going on that Emmy would be safe, and might even be able to come home some day to see who was still standing. "We let the ship do the moving for us," said Bernice. "Meantime, why don't you touch up your makeup?" Big mistake. Whatever you told Emmy to do, that pretty much ensured that was the last thing she'd be interested in doing. Bernice had seen her spend ages fine-tuning the swirling green-purple-gold designs that her whole family wore, spreading their tendrils over their cheeks and under their eyes. But now instead, the one thing she wanted was to check in with all her friends on the data weave, which was the one thing Bernice had to forbid her to do. Then they'd all know she wasn't dead. Life, someone had once said, was just one damn thing after another. But that was a big, comforting lie, wasn't it? Life, as far as Bernice could tell, was never less than six damn things all at the same time. It had been a ridiculously long time since she'd had a place where she'd really felt centred, or at least not had a general sense of waking up already bracing for whatever curveball the day would throw at her. Still, she'd begun to realise she was getting good at, not so much landing on her feet, more managing to fall upwards for a change, without actually stopping in any one place. She'd only come to the Diner Quay to do a bit of sightseeing. The red and white palace, from which the unbroken lines of queens had ruled for 2,500 years, was said to be one of the 12 wonders of this part of the universe. But it had all gone off the rails even before she made it there. Take a dodgy quantum slingshot boost she'd bought at a way station to speed up the journey, run it a little too close to the A0620-00B black hole, and she'd been flung light years from anywhere, practically stranded in deep space before she could limp into port. But then her life swung just as randomly in the other direction. A chance encounter in the scented gardens with a minor duchess, plus a few intriguing tales from her adventures, and her position tumbled up the social ladder. Tea at the palace, meeting the family, a few tipsy confessions, overheard words, and suddenly she found herself tasked by a wounded princess to get her youngest sister to safety, outrunning an officially sanctioned assassination plot. That did seem to be the trouble with the Diner Quay, of course. The two queens were supposed to be a double godhead, with the White Queen responsible for life inside their empire, while the Red Queen dealt with the outside universe. But when the two queens weren't actually on the same side of the board, well, the kids outside the immediate line of succession made lovely pawns. Bernice half suspected that's what they had them for, really. So now Emmy's life was in danger for obscure political reasons that would not only have been completely irrelevant to her, but also probably deeply boring. Bernice didn't have a prayer of following what the dispute was actually about. All she knew was that even in this swirling off-centre universe, she couldn't imagine a reason why this child would deserve to die. They'd give her a few days in this cabin and she might change her mind. Their first cargo stop would come in 2 days, the captain had told her. Bernice decided the safest option was not to even think of taking any shore leave at that point. Maybe another 3 days, once they hit the territory of the Sevenfold Holding Company, LLC. Unfortunately, that meant that she and Princess Emmy would be spending at least 5 days straight in the ship, or indeed, for safety's sake, in the cabin. By the second day, she'd taken to sitting on top of Emmy, just to keep her from climbing the walls. Emmy thought this was hilarious and wrestled and wriggled and shrieked with laughter while repeatedly elbowing Bernice in various internal organs. Anything to burn up that inexhaustible supply of energy. But playing immovable object to Emmy's irresistible force got old fairly quickly, and as soon as Emmy was spent enough to feel like trolling her data feed, again Bernice retreated to treat her internal injuries with a healthy dose of alcohol. It was almost a relief when the bugs finally came under the door. The ship had just undocked for their first cargo stop. The Peds had made sure there was no easy retreat there. Benny shouted and pointed, and Emmy tried to squash the first scout, but it escaped back under the door before they could prevent it warning the others. "Get your things," ordered Bernice. But by the time they could run, dozens more were swarming under the door jamb, clambering over each other, snapping into place atop one another with an audible clickety-click-click to form an undulating vertical line, swaying whip-like with a chittering of dozens of tiny pincers and jaws. Bernice whacked it with a pillow, then with half a pillow, almost a metre high now, too tall to step on, and more of the creatures forming up at the bottom, the legs of the ones above them realigning to interlock on a more stable base, the whip shifting shape, becoming a triangle, a pyramid of teeth. Yow! With a war cry and a satisfying crunch, Emmy jumped down from her bunk onto the stacked mass of peed. That thinned their numbers. but the survivors promptly sank their pincers and jaws into the layers of jewelled cloth wrapped around her legs. Bernice had to heft Emmy clear before mashing the rest of the growing peed with a drawer from the end table, then picking off and stomping the survivors. By the time Emmy shook the last off, her robes had been reduced to ribbons below the knee. Her calves were streaked with blood from the first few bites. "Move!" shouted Bernice. She still hesitated before yanking the cabin door open, in case a whole tide of further peds would suddenly flood in. "Come on! To the cargo bay!" Or, she realised after the fact, come on to the place where the main mass of peds would be most likely to have been lurking all this time. But that was where the cargo transporters were, and those were their best hopes of getting off this boat before it went to weft. Bernice managed to jump-start a forklift, send it trundling down the length of the cargo bay, in hopes of drawing the peds away. And she had enough crackers and countermeasures in her travel bag that she'd have no problem bypassing the security lockdown on the transporter. Probably. "Right, Emmy, not things over. Make a mess, anything that'll slow them down." Emmy was more than happy to oblige. "Here." Bernice grabbed a couple of metal rods from a disassembled pile of shelving, tossing one to Emmy. Then she left Emmy on guard as she worked at the console, waiting for the skittering of 10 million tiny feet. It wasn't cooperating. She managed to lock the transporter onto the moon base, space station they had just departed from, but trying to get a send command through needed multiple layers of approval and agreement. This was typical of Dynarchy design. Why have one queen giving orders when you can have two and a lengthy argument before they finally worked out how to cooperate? And they'd made the console an elegantly thin sheet of glass, so she didn't even dare bang on it. Emmy yelped, genuine terror. The darkness in the cargo bay was surging towards them in the form of about 2.2 kilopedes. Rearing up, a wave of bugs blotting out the distant work lights, Bernice took a deep breath. "Keep hitting OK on the console. I'll get this." The wave had to break at Emmy's improvised barricade. The peds rearranged themselves into shambling shapes, clambering over the fallen boxes. That gave Bernice a chance to wade in, swinging the metal bar, sending them flying, scattering as many as she could. If she couldn't hold them back, at least she could keep them stupid. Not that they'd need much intelligence to gnaw them to death independently, but she'd take anything she could get. Not enough. Stomping and swinging, watching Moore pour over the barricade out of her reach, tearing into her shoes and scurrying up her legs. "Emmy! Hurry it up!" Emmy, wide-eyed, stepped back from the console and pointed. A child's dramatic gesture of command. "Do it!" It worked. Something deep in the console released with a satisfying whoosh, and within moments the teleport field rippled through Bernice's body. She always wondered whether this was what being a grated carrot felt like. When it cut out, she threw herself to the floor, whatever floor it was now, and rolled and kicked till she crushed every last one of the peds on her. Eyes back in focus now. Look around. A dim corridor. Check all her bits were back in the right order. None of them had become intertwangled with Emmy, and nothing was eating them right at the moment.
"I saw a few more come through," breathed Emmy, eyes wide. "But they ran off."
"They must be going to go..." Bernice paused. "Make more." She didn't want to burden the kid with mental pictures of peed reproduction. But from her reading on the ship, it would probably involve them scuttling into the base's sugar stores and spending hours in a non-stop piranha bug orgy. "We've probably got a day or two until enough new ones hatch. In their millions."
"We're safe?"
"Ish," Bernice exhaled slowly. Emmy's eyes stayed wide, dilated, still visibly quivering in her tattered robes. "Quick, give her some other damn thing to think about.
So, tell me that wasn't a coincidence. How'd you make it work?" "My royal override."
Emmy tapped her temple, still careful not to smear the green-purple-gold swirls.
"It can't override Mum or my big sisters, but any other system belonging to the Dynarchy I can talk to."
"So you can think and give orders to any computer in the Dynarchy?"
"No,"
said Emmy, pained by Bernice's profound wrongness.
"I make suggestions."
And you never thought to mention this, thought Bernice, internally banging her head on the floor. Well, she said brightly, unfortunately, now we're outside the Dynarchy, that's not going to be much of a help, is it? Maybe let's concentrate on working out where we are. At least the fear and panic had faded into irritation for both of them. Bernice gathered herself up and headed towards the more brightly lit end of the corridor. Right, so wherever we are, we need to get passage on the next liner in the general direction of Corris. No papers, no connections, maybe 2 days before the bugs come for us. So anything else the world wants to throw at me, I hope it will get on with it, and... She trailed off as the corridor fed them into a large plaza chamber full of greenery and pedestrians. Some multicoloured humanoid, some elongated woodlice with lightning bolt ridges at the joints of their shells. Bernice slowed, her steps dragging, feeling a wrongness pull at her. A head-on collision between profound déjà vu and equally profound confusion, because she didn't recognise the place in the slightest. Then the whole world rotated through 11 degrees. Bernice found herself leaning heavily on a pedestrian bench beside her, which, of course, she'd known would be there. She sat down, hard, and laughed wearily for so long that an infuriated Princess Emmy ended up tugging on her arm, demanding to be let in on the joke. Wiping her eyes, Bernice told her exactly where they were.
"I don't get it," said Emmy. "What's so funny about the Sky Pyramid of Zava?"
Bloody quantum slingshot boost, thought Bernice when she could think straight again, and bloody black hole. When she'd first headed for the Dynarchy, it hadn't just dumped her ship light years off course, but millennia back in time. That's what you got when you combined quantum physics with out of warranty. Embarrassing that she'd never spotted it. But then, the Dynarchy was like ancient Egypt. You could pop in anywhere over 2,000 years and only the names of the queens had changed. Even the fact that the Dynarchy bordered the Zarvan space and was a major trading partner of the House of Aeneri hadn't made the penny drop. All the travel guides and news blots had called it the New Zarvan Kingdom, but then the Middle Kingdom was hardly going to call itself the Middle Kingdom when, as far as it was concerned, it was still the new one on the block, wasn't it? But she still hadn't seen this coming. Even though she knew it was coming, she hadn't seen it coming. Of course, she'd spent a fair bit of time since the expedition on Zava pondering how her brand new electronic diary had appeared, battered and worn inside an ancient relic. She'd had a quiet word with the data archaeologists on Zava, trying to extract any surviving words from the relic. No dice. She'd studied the historical records and formed her own theories about the crash, and what the sainted crown prince and treacherous overseer had actually been up to. She worried about what keen awareness of future history would compel her to get involved in this planet's past, what grave moral decisions she might have to make about the fate of a station full of people, what strands she might be plucking in the web of time. But now, at this moment, staring it in the face, it turned out she didn't give a toss about the sweep of history. She'd seen what it was sweeping towards, how all too soon the lights would be going out across this whole universe, and given that, right now, she couldn't care less about which gang of autocrats came out on top in the next little stretch. Funny. Over all the decades of frenetic adventures, she'd gradually learned to deal with the big picture like a grown-up. But maybe that was the next stage of growing up. After you'd grown up, knowing when not to bother. All that mattered to her right now was getting this one infuriating, defenceless, alive little girl to safety. And that was fine, because once she checked the date, it looked like the legendary fall of the Sky Pyramid wasn't even going to be her problem. The pyramid wasn't due to crash for at least another 2 weeks. Either she and Emmy would be off the station by then, or the Peds would have got them both. Best just to get on with it. A few inquiries in the transit lounge about booking passage, followed by a demand to speak to the desk monkey superior. From there, it was a matter of finding someone in the hierarchy who could send an internal message directly to the Sky Station overseer. "I know what the Crown Prince is up to. Let's talk." "He'll know what it means," she assured the bewildered middle manager. A few minutes later, she and Emmy had an appointment with the overseer himself. The door to his office ground slowly open. After Bernice's time in the Dynarchy, everything here had a primitive solidity to it. Technology in the Dynarchy went swish and ching and swoop, while the Sky Pyramid was all clunk and thunk and grinding pieces of metal or stone. Maybe they were trying to impress the locals on Zava by making it clear just how heavy this thing their conquerors had hung in the sky was. "Look regal and mean," she whispered to Emmy as they were ushered in, "and go along with whatever I say. They'll think you know something." Emmy gave her fiercest glare, enough to distract from the ragged edges of her robes. The Overseer didn't look like one of history's greatest villains. Even in the form of a giant pill bug, Bernice could scent a worn-down career public servant who'd been promoted once too often. He was fiddling wearily with a multi-pronged executive toy as they entered, and gestured irritably for them to sit. She could feel his incipient migraine from across the room. "I'll make it quick," she said. "The Crown Prince is planning a coup, probably using an army of these fellows." She slapped the thigh of one of the two warrior statues in their bright violet finery flanking the door of his office. "You know it, I know it, you're probably still wondering what you can do about it." And would the answer turn out to be, "Crash his whole station, sacrificing himself for his king, and be damned as a traitor by history nevertheless?" Perhaps. But not yet. "Luckily my royal observer here," gesturing to Emmy, who leaned glaringly across his desk at him, "and I can put a few words in with the two queens, make sure the loyalists have the support you need, if you grant us passage through to Corus on the next boat out of here. Do we have a deal?" The Overseer blinked at them for a while. Even the fine white moustache of his mandibles looked knotted with anxiety. Finally, he picked up his executive toy and squeezed with every ounce of his concentration. And the two bright violet soldier statues clanked and ground into position to block the door. Then he ran a finger down an intercom panel on his desk.
"My lord, we've got a problem. Someone's found us out."
"What did I tell you?" Bernice sighed. "Where there's a crown prince, there's a coup. I just didn't pick the right person to tell." The cell was even more cramped than their cabin. At least Emmy wasn't bored yet, more shaken and quiet, holding her knees and staring fixedly at the bars. She was watching for any stray peds scurrying between them on a scouting mission. So far, she'd stomped six. That meant they probably had less time than Bernice had hoped. Too many things coming from too many directions, thought Bernice. She knew how Emmy felt. The Crown Prince and the Overseer had locked them in here while they worked out just how much interrogation they could get away with. Bernice just hoped they weren't trying to verify Emmy's identity with the Dynarchy, and thus discovering that the White Queen was entirely happy for her to be dead. And she'd seen the perplexed, broken look spreading across Emmy's face when she realised she couldn't just point and wheedle, or just tell the Overseer what he should do. Nothing made sense anymore. Nothing was safe, nothing could be relied upon. The universe had lost its centre. They were supposed to be standing in the middle of a neat puzzle that would make sense if you just moved it the right way. A bunch of pieces that would just click together. But the shapes wouldn't stay still. "Emmy," asked Bernice, mock severely, "are you being brave?" She didn't look up.
"I guess."
"Well, you can stop that right now." That got her attention. She continued more quietly. "Back when my mum died, when I was a little girl, everyone told me I was being so brave. I wasn't being brave. I was being nothing. And that kind of nothing worked for a while. But it didn't get me out of the hole I was in." Emmy sat down, curling up.
"I just want it to stop."
"Oh, sweetheart." Bernice scooted over and gave her an awkward hug. "I wish it would too. But right now, we don't need to be brave and tough. We need to be..." She groped for a word.
"Adventurous." "What's that supposed to mean?"
It means we've got somewhere to go, something to do, and what we do needs to be about getting there. We need to focus. Okay, so this pep talk was more for her than for Emmy, but it was a start. We need a way to get out of here, or away from them once they take us out of here. We need ideas. Bernice cast her eyes around, searching the walls, staring at the grooved conduits behind their transparent panels, the bright violet coursing through them like oil. I know about this stuff. It's how the Crown Prince controls things. It's woven into all the tech on the station, even their computers. It gives him and his people total control. Programmable photo-algae, she declared to Emmy, using the big words to give herself confidence in what she was saying. But it didn't make sense somehow. Even more than life already spectacularly wasn't making sense. In this clanking steel and stone station, that kind of tech was just so much more deft than the rest of the Sky Pyramid. And their idea of creating a super soldier with it was literally just to paint a rock. She pressed on. But they need a controller. Like the Overseer was using some kind of gadget to push the statues around with his mind. If we can interfere with that, even just disrupt things, we might get a chance to escape. She started scrabbling at the conduit, trying to find a weak point. But we'll need power. Emmy, see if you can get that light fixture down.
What do you need that for?
We need to rig up some sort of controller. That'll need power.
No, I mean what you need to make a controller for.
Emmy tapped her temple again.
I don't need one.
Bernice took a breath. This isn't the diner key, Emmy. Bright violet isn't one of your...
I know about bright violet,
insisted Emmy in that voice which she really didn't mean to be irritating.
How do you think these guys got it?
Bernice slowed to a halt, seizing up like the statues themselves.
We gave it to their royal family hundreds of years ago. It was a peace deal between our family and theirs.
Emmy ran her fingers over the makeup on her face without touching.
Didn't you see?
And Bernice could just make out the purple whirls on her cheeks moving, gently, slightly, of their own volition. She sat down.
Now what are the odds, she managed. Of all the people in the universe she could be locked in a cell with, she'd got the one with the royal master key to the whole station. But then, she would never have been in this cell without anyone else. Emmy, being royalty, was the only reason she was anywhere within a dozen light years of the station to begin with. The sheer improbability of it all meant there actually wasn't any other way things could have turned out. Emmy was standing up, nose to the conduit, crooking a little finger at one of the seams in the plexiglass.
Hey, come on, you wanna?
And a little bead of bright violet cautiously poked itself out onto her fingertip.
Oh, this is mental, breathed Bernice.
You said if your day made sense, it's not really an adventure, is it?
Don't push it, kid. She had no idea where it had come from, but she could feel a grin spreading across her face. This was her, rolling with it. She stared at the droplet as it inched its way up Emmy's finger.
We can't just order every bit of it around, can we? She murmured.
They'll have security.
Emmy laughed.
They don't really get how it works. Why do you think it's so hard for them to make things move? They're all meh about it. They're always trying to give it orders.
Well, then, how do your lot do it?
We give it ideas.
She let Emmy do her makeup from the little kit she carried with her. First, a stick-on filigree of fine gold circuitry applied next to the skin, a bone's width from the brain, then the carefully painted patterns of the three colours over the top.
And bright violet wants to go and do, Emmy explained. The deep green wants to listen and be. We use both, but we only gave them one. And they smooth each other out. That's why we do better at it than them.
And what's the gold for? Emmy shrugged.
Decoration.
The more Emmy drew on her, the more she could feel her skin tingling, a neuroelectric charge, the sense of a million tiny thoughts racing just out of view, like the bubbles of a really good champagne. That could be it. The whole universe was drunk, and now she was finally catching up. So, how do I get this stuff to listen to me?
You make it like your idea, said Emmy. They ain't eerie. They just want it to do what it's told. That's never the way.
Well, what is the way?
It's already got a way. You let it find it by itself.
Just follow its nature.
It's curious, said Emmy. It wants to try new things, and you can encourage it. If you ask it if it's thirsty, it'll go find water.
It all fit. The bright violet didn't know how it worked, but it could do what it wanted. Emmy knew how it worked, but she didn't know what to do with it. And Bernice, well, she hadn't a clue, but once they handed her one, she was full of ideas. She giggled as Emmy painted a curve across the top of her cheekbone. You're giving me an analogue interface.
Stay still or I'll draw it wrong, Emmy said severely.
Nah, said the alarm system all over the station, repeating itself for effect. The station was listing lazily to the side. Except it wasn't. As the computers told the shocked crew, it was the artificial gravity that was forcing everyone aboard to list to the left. Then shortly afterwards, to the right. Repeat till nausea. Bernice and Emmy were united in giggling as Bernice flexed her makeup, learning from it as one learns how to ride a horse, gently, carefully, and with respect. And enormous glee. Emmy leapt up.
Control them! She yelped. Seriously, use bright violet to take control of the robots. Just grab the lot of them by the positronics and make them fight for us.
But Bernice was shaking her head. No, no, no. Control isn't what we need here. We need to get things out of control. And I'm right on it. Attack Robot 439, statue, was happy in his work, as much as a not particularly characterful sentient could be. It had a limited range of options in its existence, all of which fulfilled its basic purpose. Now, however, it was receiving some very confusing impulses and ideas, one of which was that it should strangle the attack robot next to it. Strangulation seemed odd, since its new enemy didn't have a windpipe to crush, but nonetheless the strategy seemed effective in twisting its head off. While the statues were busy committing articide, Bernice turned her attention to their next move, getting off the station. In theory, it was easy. She simply interfaced with the main computer, tendrils of bright violet's consciousness becoming one with the onboard AI, booking them passage on the next available space liner, this one with proper warp drive at that, under assumed names. Watertight and safe. From there, on to Corris, and then for her back to the Diner Key, her ship, and a quantum slingshot boost that she was sure could be convinced to return her the way it had got her here. Which meant that, in the end, this whole fate of an empire moment would be ending up looking like the footnote it was. Now all they had to do was to get to the liner undetected, and there wasn't nearly enough chaos going on yet to make that easy. The overseer of the Sky Pyramid turned to the Crown Prince of Aeneri, grimacing with his whole head.
"Sir, these two females are the biggest threat to the plan that we have ever encountered," he said. "We have no way to control them through either violence or bribery."
The Crown Prince inclined his head, intending to look imperious, but in fact looking slightly drunken, and the overseer knew perfectly well what was coming.
"Overseer, you have made an oversight."
"You mean it's my problem?"
"Exactly. I want them dead, and I want it soon, if not immediately."
The overseer blew his cheeks out and stabbed a button on his control desk, intending to give a command, but instead found himself looking in horror at the readings that flowed across his screen. He managed, looking up guiltily. The Crown Prince narrowed his eyes.
"Yes?"
It seems that the warrior statues are attacking each other. Well, some of them are. 20 of them are chasing nothing across the starboard part of the station, and...
He stopped in embarrassment until the prince's eyes forced him to continue.
And the rest are playing marbles on the cargo decks.
For the first time, the overseer saw genuine panic well up in his master's expression.
These women could blow us wide open, expose the conspiracy. What have we got that we can use against them?
Emmy squealed as a carpet of peed swirled across the floor towards them, already forming up into shapes. This time they were abandoning any pretense at humanoid form, becoming instead a wall of spikes, teeth and pincers, a grotesque array of nature's weapons in one.
I got this, grinned Bernice.
It wasn't a nice grin either. The oncoming peds slowed suddenly in their tracks, began to waver, their combined form almost disintegrating, but they managed to hold on. No, Emmy realized, they weren't holding on. They were being held together. By Bernice, by swirls of bright violet pouring from the conduits. Bernice concentrated, spoke wordlessly to bright violet, which responded by caressing reality once again, so that the peds now started revolving, their form elongating as they did until they were one long twirling line stretching from the floor to the ceiling. Then she started really playing with them, twisting them into a helix, making them dance a modular can-can, scattering them across the floor and controlling their flow as if a magnet to iron filings. At that moment, she felt utterly connected to the station, it being an extension of her body and mind. Then yet more, even than that, extending herself out into the universe. She was drawn back from this cosmic playtime by a tap on her shoulder from Emmy.
Ahem,
said the princess, with all the dignity and authority that she had inherited by birth.
I think we should go now, don't you?
Bernice smiled at this remarkably mature comment, and pulled her consciousness together.
Yep.
They made it all the way back to the hangar before the Crown Prince caught up with them. A squad of tick-tock soldiers blocked their way. Déjà vu, thought Bernice, only this time the soldiers weren't in pieces. The Crown Prince didn't look like one of history's greatest villains either, but boy was he trying. Basically, a smirk on legs. The overseer standing by his side, the prince had delegated holding the inevitable gun. He stood, blocking the airlock in his iridescent green robes, and looked down his stubby nose at them.
Did you really think you could escape us?
With a mighty effort, he raised a clenched fist, and every one of the statues matched his motion.
You and your child should know how...
Emmy cut him off.
You will address me according to my rank and title, she declared,
stepping in front of Bernice with a stony look she'd learnt from Mum.
Oh, wait, thought Bernice. This is a meeting between equals.
Oh, wait. No, it isn't. Oh, sod this for a game of soldiers, Bernice said, and she raised her arms wide and made little tickling motions with her fingers. And the whole station shuddered. That loud, brave, drunken, loving part of the back of her mind asked the bright violet in the gravsis,
Hey, what does this button do?
And the world started pulling low and to the left. The sky pyramid creaked and screeched, trying to find a new shape. Bernice gave it the tiniest nudge, working with the confidence of someone who actually knows what she's doing, ending with a little celebratory spurt from the orbital control thrusters. Everybody fell upwards, but she was ready for it. She only let the bright violet do just enough to prove a point. Then it told it, Whoa, whoa, maybe that's too much. How about you put things back in order there? Across the station, the control systems put their toys away. The thrusters gently nudged the station back into its proper place. When the dust cleared, the statues had toppled, and the Crown Prince had plastered himself against the nearest wall, eyes wide. And Emmy, despite having fallen unceremoniously on her bottom, was crawling towards him with righteous triumph in her eyes. But that wasn't the way. What mattered wasn't that her adolescent power fantasy could beat up their adolescent power fantasy, but that her adolescent power fantasy knew when to stop. "Come on," she said, lifting Emmy to her feet by the collar. "We've got places to go, and we don't actually care what they're up to." She prodded the face-down overseer with the toe of her boot as he hugged the floor, trying to hold it in place.
"Is this where they get the idea?" asked the tiny voice in the back of her mind. "To know they can use bright violets to crash the station in a couple of weeks' time. If their coup is being investigated and they're in danger of being exposed, did they choose to die with their power base rather than let the truth come out?"
"Hush, Summerfield," she told herself. "This universe does not revolve around you." Emmy was gaping at her, eyes wide, just for this one moment. Bernice was cool. Bernice basked in her approval as she escorted the girl around the Crown Prince and Overseer and in through the airlock. "Come on, Emmy, let's get you on board." Then dash back out a moment later, stepping over their prone bodies. "Whew, almost forgot. You two, stay right there." Because she had to complete the loop. Because she still wasn't quite ready to give up on the idea of a sensible universe. She made her way to a storeroom near the bottom peak of the pyramid and carefully placed the still fairly new electronic diary that she'd been carrying around with her since the dig on Zava, complete with its ridiculous tag, "Property of Bare Knees Summerfield," right where she had found it months ago, thousands of years in the future. Or rather, the diary which looked like the one she'd been carrying since Zava, because she'd left the original behind in a grubby spaceport food court ages ago, and then gone to ridiculous lengths to track down a replacement and get it engraved to match the last one. Because it never had to be the same diary. Just look enough like the original that her younger self would get the message. Whatever threads of causality actually held this fraying universe together, they were much finer and way more tangled than she had thought. And maybe it was the bright violet still bubbling through her neurons, but she couldn't hold the giggles back any more. Practically every bit of the story she'd woven round the diary, her own crucial part in world-changing events, had been flat-out wrong. But never mind. That was never the way it worked. The real message in the diary was that it was in her nature to find the way.